Welcome to The Buyer's Desk, an infra podcast where we bring you retail conversations worth checking out. I'm Angela Bozo.
And I'm Pat Sheridan. Tune in as we explore the trends, insights, and stories driving the natural foods industry.
Pull up a seat and let's get started.
Hi, my name is Kara Bittner, director of the Natural Channel for Poppy, and I'm here to talk about how Poppy aligns with infra and why we're obsessed with the natural retail community. Poppy's a modern soda made with 5 grams of sugar, prebiotics, and ingredients you can love. The best part? It has the mouth-watering soda flavor you love, but with 5 grams of sugar. Our mission is to give people the freedom to love soda again without any of the typical soda baggage. And that's why Poppy aligns so well with infra retailers. Infra stores are known for introducing shoppers to innovative, better-for-you products, and their customers actively look for brands that support healthier lifestyles. Poppy's bold flavors, eye-catching branding, and a better-for-you ingredients create something shoppers feel good about reaching for. And with 18 flavors and new innovations all the time, there's truly a flavor for everyone. If you'd like to learn more about Poppy or explore our flavors, visit our website or follow us on social media.
Okay, I'm here with Jesse Beckett Parr. Jesse, it's so great to see you again. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Jesse, could you take a moment and just tell the listeners about CCOF and what you do?
Absolutely. So CCOF was founded as California Certified Organic Farmers in 1973. We were one of the original organizations on the ground that helped codify what it means to be certified organic. We're farmer to farmer. We're a nonprofit. Today, we certify, educate, and advocate for organic in Mexico, Canada, and the United States. And we have 5,000 member producers. And that includes farmers, livestock operators, handlers, and retailers.
We're going to dive right in because this is such an important topic, not only to CCOF, but to the whole organic world and also to our listeners. And I'm excited to have the conversation, but I also think it's really urgent. So we're just going to dive right in and start. And I'm going to start off with the fact that you've spent your career in organic, but you also produced a documentary about soil, the symphony of the soil. What pulled you toward the ground itself, and how does that show up in the work you lead at CCOF today?
Yeah, thanks for that question, Pat. And thank you again for having me here. We love anytime we get to work with infra and your buyers network and really kind of dive in, how do we make this connection between seed to farm to table through the retail space? So it's a really important audience for our membership. And to start with myself, we can start there. I grew up on a conventional farm in Salinas, California, which some people call the salad bowl of the world. So if you're listening to this and you're on the East Coast and you enjoy eating romaine or bag salad mix, most of the time of the year, it's coming from the Salinas Valley out here in California. And a lot of the businesses there, they have off-season production in Yuma, Arizona, or Mexico, other places there. So they grow year-round. And my stepdad grew up there in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and he was a conventional farmer. He had a large vertically integrated lettuce operation, and my mom was the general manager of that operation. And they were really early in what I call the salad mix revolution. So for those of you under 30, you don't remember when salad didn't come in a bag all nicely mixed up for you in small baby pieces that's already pre-washed and having a dressing on the side there just for you to throw in a salad bowl. But there was a time before that when most lettuce didn't look like that.
There was. That's right.
It looked like maybe you could get some head lettuce. You were probably eating iceberg. It looked more like a cabbage, wasn't pre-mixed. And My stepdad, Jake, was an early innovator in how do you keep lettuce alive for a long time in a bag? So he had a bunch of patents on ripping and tearing lettuce off instead of cutting lettuce, and lots of different ways to layer in protective barriers or put holes in a bag. He was really into how do you keep lettuce alive in a bag. So that's what my refrigerator looked like as a kid. It was full of lettuce in different types of bags with different types of treatments to figure out how to keep it alive for as long as possible. And when I was in middle school, he was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. He was 48. And that eventually, over 4 years, progressed from his liver, from his colon to his liver to his lungs, his kidneys, and eventually brain cancer killed him. And he was 48 when he was diagnosed and 52 when he died. And I was along with my parents for the journey of, wow, what we do in our environment and our work every day affects our bodies. And I got to see that firsthand in my household. And I am dedicated to making sure that no family goes through what my family went through. We talk about it in terms of consumers. We talk about it in terms of farmers and farm workers who are affected by agricultural chemicals, but we are all fragile. And I had that first awareness of what mortality looks like as a middle school and high school student. And I decided to dedicate my career to figuring out how do we get these agricultural chemicals out of our food system, out of our environment, out of our bodies. And I've been obsessed with that mission for a long time at this point. So that's what got me to my work here at CCOF.
Wow, that's a profound story and a tragic story. I'm sorry that's what brought you to this, but also it's wonderful it brought you to where you are, because it's made a difference, frankly. You know, when I think about what you do and what CCOF does, helping farmers, you know, transition to organic, and I've learned so much over the last several years. And one of the things that I learned early on, which it's easy to think, well, you just stop using pesticides and you stop doing a few things and then you're organic, right? And of course, it's much harder than that. So I wonder if you could just take a little time and help our listeners understand what actually happens to a farmer during, and it's a 3-year transition, during the 3 years it takes to transition to organic, and why is that 3-year period so difficult for them?
Absolutely. Yeah. So 3 years is really just the beginning of an organic transition. It takes a long time to transition from a chemical process to a biological process. But 3 years is the window that was determined through the process of the National Organic Program. So organic regulations are overseen by the United States Department of Agriculture here in the US, USDA, and they have a program called the National Organic Program. And the organic regulations were passed by Congress and are implemented by that program at the USDA. And as part of those regulations, you have to have a 3-year from date of last prohibited material, so the last thing that's not allowed in organic, until the first harvest. You have to have 3 years. And so that's it's codified in federal regulations. And that is something that makes organic stand out from other types of food labeling, is that it is a law. It's a national law. And to talk about the transition, conventional farms use synthetic inputs. So they use synthetic fertilizer, pesticides, fungicides. These are agricultural chemicals that either provide nutrients to plants or kill things that are eating or threatening the plants. And organic farms are not allowed to use synthetic inputs. So organic farms are only allowed to use biologically derived inputs. So when farmers stop using those synthetic or chemical inputs like fertilizers, pesticides, and fungicides, and start to use biology and ecology to manage their soil and their ecosystems, there's just a lot of destruction. It takes a long time to build biological soil fertility. You know, synthetic nitrogen is easy to apply, but it burns up very quickly once it's applied. So in chemical-derived systems, you can basically spoon feed a plant just as much nitrogen as it needs, But if it's a chemical input, it's going to burn up, either volatilizing into the atmosphere, leaching into the water, or the plant's going to take it up pretty rapidly. So it's not available for further plants. But biological soil fertility is really about long-term storage stewardship. How do we take care of the microorganisms that are a community inside the soil? And how do you feed them and steward them so that then they feed your plants? And so you do that through cover crops or for compost or crop rotations. And it takes a long time to build those ecological checks and balances. So not only do you have to do soil biology and stewardship of the soil microorganism community, you also have to build up ecology above ground. So that means attracting good bugs into your system as a check and balance against bugs that are going to come and eat the things you're trying to grow. So you need to plant new plants that create habitat and create crop rotations and have a diversified crop mix to mimic ecological processes. And all of these things take time. And something I should mention, because it is one of the massive barriers for folks in transition, is that when farmers stop using those synthetic fertilizers, their yield generally quickly drops. And that means that they have less revenue, right? You have less yield, you have less things to sell. So when they're transitioning a full system and they cannot use those synthetic fertilizer inputs, it costs more and they don't make as much money. So that's really the gap that's there in that three-year window. But when farmers get to the other side of the transition, their costs decrease because they don't need to buy as many inputs because their system is managing itself biologically. The soil is managing itself. The ecology is managing itself. And they're generally able to get a premium for their crop in the market. So they're spending less money and they're making more money. So long-term, getting across that bridge really can help save the family farm. But there's this lack of public support for that three-year transition here in the U.S. And we expect farmers to take all the risk. We accept them to be the ones who are like, okay, this is your business. You know, you're the ones who are going to have to take this on. But it's all of us who benefit because we have healthier soil, healthier water, healthier food, healthier communities. Why would we not invest in farms that want to make this transition?
100% agree. And we do have it backwards in this country, and many countries have it the right direction. So I've been to those countries, and it's fascinating how well it works there. And there's some data that supports that. So I'm going to not exactly pivot, but shift to a topic that I think is super important. And I know you do too. CCOF leads the Western and Southwestern region of TOP. And I'm going to ask you for our listeners to explain the TOP program simply, and then tell me what it's actually accomplished nationally. And then what do the numbers look like when you add up all six of the regions?
Sure thing. Yeah. So TOP stands for the Transition to Organic Partnership Program, which is a USDA program that's been supporting farmers for the last many years in their transition to organic. And to really understand why it's so important and why this moment is different, you have to look back at the history of how the USDA has treated organic. Organic has been treated fairly skeptically by the majority of administrations in the USDA. And when farmers started to conceptualize of this thing called certified organic, they really did so on their own. They were doing farmer-to-farmer teach-ins about how do you grow without agricultural chemicals, how do you manage soil biologically. And they started organizations that created these things called certifications. And for decades, they were all farmer-led, all volunteer-led, until the passage of the USDA National Organic Program and the laws in 2002. Even at that point, the only investment that USDA was making in this thing organic was a little bit of research money, and then this National Organic Program, which oversees the regulations and accredits certifiers to be able to say this thing is organic. So this organic transition program is really the first time in the organic movement's history when the USDA consciously said, we're going to help people get to the other side of that transition. We're going to put money out and boots on the ground in rural communities across America to make sure that people who want to transition to organic can be successful. And USDA's recognition that organic is a valid, not just a program, but it's a rural economic development strategy. It supports public health outcomes through pesticide reduction. And there is this reality that we're importing an ever greater share of organic food into the United States. So, you know, your membership has likely doubled over the last 10 or 15 years. In infra, you've got more stores stocking organic, both on kind of the conventional side and also in co-ops. Like, it's growing here in the U.S. And it's not, the farm base in the United States is not growing as fast as the food market category. So here in the U.S., we have an ever increasing share of imported food that's certified organic, which means that other countries are reaping those benefits that we talked about earlier, environmental, public health, economic. So to address this issue, the USDA decided, hey, let's make this thing called the Transition Organic Partnership Program. It's a $100 million program spread over a bunch of years. And the National Organic Program oversees it. They broke the U.S. up into six different regions because the U.S. is a huge landmass. And our organization, CCUF, was picked to lead the West and Southwest region. So states across the West and Southwest, from Texas all the way through California, and then all the way to Hawaii. And we were tasked with, how do you get people to transition through a few different focal areas? First one's community building. Nobody gets into organic for the paperwork. They get into it because they want to eat really good food with people. They want to sell really good food to people. They might want to go to a barn dance. They'd like to go to a field day. So how do you get people out to talk about organic and interested in organic? The second piece of it is technical assistance. How do you get people the one-on-one technical assistance that they need to fill out the paperwork, to figure out how to balance their nitrogen ratios in their soil organically? And then the third major aspect of the program was mentorship. So there's a farmer-to-farmer mentorship component of this. And collectively, across the United States, there's 200 organizations that have been involved in deploying community building, technical assistance, and mentorship. And we have hundreds and hundreds of folks who have gone through the mentorship program, direct one-on-one, hiring veteran organic farmers to provide that phone call in the middle of a harvest when you're like, oh no, I just found this bug. What's going to happen to my X, Y, and Z? So we had 3,600 mentoring pairs established nationally, 3,600. We had about 6,500 farmers receive technical assistance, direct one-on-one, pick up the phone. You'll get an extension agent, somebody at a farmer organization, somebody at a university picks up the phone, helps you with your technical question. And the program put on about almost 3,000 events, reached over 150,000 people, conferences, field days, webinars, seminars, virtual, online, in person. And we've transitioned hundreds of thousands of acres to organic. And that was really, you know, not all programs that are set up to be this large in scope are this successful. It was led by these six organizations, mine included, that really worked cooperatively to figure out, how do we run a functional national program with hundreds of partners looking to accomplish the same goals? And I'm proud of what we've accomplished.
You should be. It's impressive. You know, like so many things, it's about people, right? Are there any of these mentorship at the core of this? It makes sense, really. I mean, when you think of it in the big dollars and the big things that you're trying to move, that seems impossible. But then when you tell this story, it's like, of course, that's what makes sense. Do you have any stories or a particular story that you can share about one of these mentorship situations that resonates with you or that you recall that was meaningful?
Of course. I love stories. I love storytelling. I actually learn the best when people tell me stories. That's the things that really stick in my head. And so I want to tell the story of one of these mentorship pairs out here in California. So we were contacted after we started to publicize, hey, we've got this mentorship opportunity. We were contacted by Jorge Reyes, who had retired from the Navy after a long career in the Navy. And he wanted to get into farming. He had taken some classes and he had planted a vineyard and he was looking to transition it to organic. And he was way down at the California-Mexico border. So pretty desert conditions. And he's like, I need a vineyard grower who's a longtime operator here in California who can deal with drylands ecosystems and soil restoration, because the parcel that he bought wasn't favorable. It didn't have great soil. And so we were able to connect him with CCUF's former board chair, Phil LaRocca. And Phil was an organic grape grower for 50 years, recently just retired. And he's from way far north in Butte County, California. But he's one of like the organic OGs. I mean, folks know Phil across the country. He always wears a big cowboy hat and a large belt buckle and some like fabulous boots he got somewhere in Mexico. And he's got a really great attitude. And Phil will just, he'll share his story with you. He's happy to like sit down over a drink and just really chat it up. So we called Phil and we're like, Phil, you said you wanted to do this mentorship thing. He was like, lay it on me, kid. What do you got? I said, yeah, we've got this guy, Jorge. He's down at the Mexico-California border. He's retired from the Navy. We'd really like your support. So Jorge and Phil, they get into relationship with each other. They really hit it off. They're calling back and forth. Phil's answering technical questions. And they've been in the relationship. I just kind of been hearing about it. I'd see them, you know, I'd see Phil at a board meeting or something, ask him about it. And he's like, oh yeah, I love it. Jorge's doing great. This is what we're working on. And then one day I'm at my desk and I get a selfie of the two of them. Now, mind you, Phil lives 12 hours away from this person by car. I was like, what is Phil doing at Jorge's house? And Phil had flown down there, spent the day with Jorge, and, you know, walked all over, you know, really like digging in on the soil biology stuff. And then they drove across the border and went to Tijuana for tacos. I was like, I got this picture of them getting tacos in Tijuana. And they were so ecstatic. They were like smiling like kids in a candy store. And I just thought to myself, what a gift, you know, that we were able to pay Phil for his time, to answer phone calls, you know, to really be there for Jorge during this transition. And they formed a friendship and a bond. And we put Jorge in touch with somebody who's been growing grapes in California for 50 years. Like, you cannot replace that type of knowledge with any type of expert professional. And it is not the same as being on YouTube. Like, so yeah, just love it.
I get it. That's a good story. Thanks for sharing that. Well, let's move on to the reality. As I understand, the TOP program is sunsetting this fall. Is it over?
Yeah. So the USDA Transition Organic Partnership Program is going to sunset this fall. The federal funding is running out. It was a one-time congressional spend. And I've had to do some grieving, quite frankly. You cannot build the next future iteration of whatever it is until you really mourn what has happened and what is happening. And I feel like I've grieved it, and I'm now in the process of, all right, what comes next? You know, the thing that I think was emergent that I hadn't realized would be as powerful is the network itself of all these different organizations doing similar types of work. And here in the West Southwest, we have 50 different organizations that were stewarding universities, farmer cooperatives, community-based organizations, and just the network itself is priceless. Because I've got 4 university extension agents that work on organic specific issues that were not in relationship before. And now they know who to call when they're like, hey, I've got this dryland wheat farmer who's having this very specific issue in Colorado. Okay, let's talk the person in Utah, right? So that is something that we will keep. We're going to keep the network. We're going to continue to be in relationship with each other and support each other. We are in the process of finalizing funding for the mentorship program to continue. So there is a national funder that has stepped up, and the mentorship program part of TOP will continue. And I'm really excited to be able to announce that publicly, but it's not public yet. So the core and heartbeat will continue. And then I think we have really proven a test case with the Transition Organic Partnership that when you do have large scale federal investment in this type of thing, it's functional and it works. And I hope to be able to have the opportunity to make the case to the USDA about why they should continue to invest in this rural infrastructure here in the U.S. so that we can reap the benefits of certified organic instead of sending that money and those consumer dollars overseas to import things?
Well, first of all, that's exciting news that you're about to announce, but also very hopeful. And frankly, and from my perspective, but when we watch what the federal government chooses to spend money on, always, but certainly lately, I mean, $100 million program seems almost insignificant, which is a surprising thing to say. And to be able to continue that feels like a no-brainer. But to your point, other countries, I think you've said, beating us at our own game makes it almost an imperative for us to continue that program. So I feel like hearing you say you feel like you're positioned to be able to fight that fight is really exciting to hear. And make sure you let us all know in the industry how we can support you.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah, I am an optimist at the end of the day. There is a $70 billion organic market that grows every year, year over year, faster than the conventional space. And that means that there's a market opportunity. So for me, it's an investment. And there's many ways that the investment can happen. It can happen federally. It can happen on state side. It can happen from philanthropic interests. It can happen from companies. And here at CCUF, we have been tapping all those different types of resources to be able to continue this work in a way that's meaningful.
So I want to ask you about one other thing as far as the day after federal funding ends, and I'll say for now. I understand CCOF has been building something designed to be self-sustaining, an endowment fund meant to support organic farmers permanently. Can you walk me through the thinking on that?
Sure thing. Yeah, so we as an organization were founded in 1973. So we just had our 50th year anniversary a couple of years ago. And we are here to stay. So we've been able to grow our membership, grow our numbers, support the expansion of organic across the United States, write a national law, all on the backs of farmers. At this point, it's time to build something that's longer term and is perpetuating into the future. So the part of the organization at C2F that I run is called the C2F Foundation. And we are the only foundation I know that doesn't have its own endowment. So we are going to raise one. And we're in the planning stages right now. The idea of an endowment is that you raise the money up front and then long-term use the interest off the endowment to invest in your mission. Our mission is a world where organic is the norm. So you are part of that. Pat and Infra is too. How do we make a world where organic is the norm? And the thing that's special about our organization is that we are for farmers by farmers. So our organization, including this endowment fund, will be overseen by farmer stewards who will make the decision about where that funding goes. So yeah, we're excited. We're excited to be building it.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I'm excited to hear more about it and the opportunities for all of us in the industry to support that. You know, I'd like to move on to, let's talk to our listeners a little bit. The audience, I think, is really asking, what do organic farmers actually need from buyers, that's our core listener group, right now to stay in organic? And not sympathy, and that doesn't help them. They would tell us that too. I speak to organic farmers myself. What's the concrete ask right now as we go through this kind of scary times for them?
Yeah. Well, buyers, it's so interesting. In the food systems movement, everybody thinks somebody else is driving. Like buyers think that farmers are driving, farmers think that buyers are driving. You know, from our organization's perspective, again, led by farmers, we have an expectation and a desire for buyers to help create demand. So having buyers not just appreciate organic from a distance or understand it intellectually, we need buyers to make organic worth the cost, risk, paperwork, and discipline it takes to stay certified. It is much easier to just say you're regenerative with no paperwork behind it and slap it on the label than it is to get certified organic and maintain the records and shell out the cost and maintain the discipline, really, that it takes to get certified. So if we were to have one concrete ask for buyers, buy more organic, merchandise it better, and help consumers understand why it matters. There's still, organic is the most well-recognized food label in America by far. 80% of Americans report buying certified organic. They generally know that it means that there's no pesticides on it. So thumbs up for consumers for getting the one key aspect of the label, but they don't understand all these other co-benefits that happen. So really, how do retailers help farmers tell that story? And it's really a partnership, right? So how do we tell the story at the shelf, in the aisle, online? And some suggestions that came from our farmers, I did some surveying, is we love signage, talk about organic, better placement, promotions, consumer education. How do we use tools that are already out there? I don't think that retailers need to reinvent the wheel. There is already a lot of good information that Infra, among others, provide about how to communicate to the consumer base about what organic means to uplift that seal.
I'll take that as an answer to a question I was going to ask. I think that's a great one, is what's one thing that our retailers could do this quarter better? And I think the upcoming quarter is a good time because Organic Month is coming up in the next quarter. And that's a part of, in our partnership with the Organic Trade Association, that's what it's about. It's about signage and educating consumers. So I like that one. Where do you see sourcing, where a buyer would source domestic, transitional, or newly certified organic actually pay off for a buyer as a strategy?
Well, so C2F has an interesting, we have a transitional labeling program. So there's only a few certifiers in the whole country that have transitional labeling. You're either, generally in most camps, you're either not certified or you are fully certified. So there's either a label or not. We have a transitional seal. It hasn't taken a lot of adoption at the retail level. It's mostly used for brands that are looking for vertical integration, for their, like, we need organic almonds for this almond butter, and we're willing to